baby back door, baby fall off, sipping codeine cause I got a killer cough. Let me sit sideways in the big bins. Oh, you boys, they my brothers, they my friends.
There's not one guy, one person in the history of this program that's bigger than the program.
Mayfield on play action.
You're listening to Brandon Drum and Parker Thune. This is the OU Insider Under the Visor podcast.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. My name is Brandon Drum, here with Parker Thune. And the holiday brought drama, brought some good news, and the portal still moveth on. The OU staff is out on the road. I used the phrase to open up when David Stone got in the portal, the portal taketh and the portal giveth, or giveth and taketh, however you want to use it. And it gave it back. David Stone is back. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about more portal visits. We're going to talk about the OU staff out on the road, how OU might finish out this 2026 class, and also finish out the roster leading into 2025, along with some basketball portal talk right here on this version of the OU Insider and the Visor Sooners podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. But before we do that, we want to thank our sponsor. So, Parker, take it away.
Yes, that starts with our presenting sponsor, Riverwind Casino, which has been the Metro's premier gaming destination for nearly two decades, folks. Almost 3,000 electronic games, table games, bars and dining options, plus, of course, the best live music in the Metro. It's no surprise that Riverwind is always a good time. Shout out to Jana King as well, a proud partner of OU Athletics, and the greatest team to ever clean, delivering spotless results from stadiums to any size business across the country. You can check them out at janiking.com. That's J-A-N-I-K-I-N-G.com. And finally, if you have not yet become acquainted with Mando, folks, and all that Mando whole body deodorant can do for you, let Brandon and I introduce you. Mando was created by a doctor who saw firsthand how normal BO was. Nothing to be ashamed of. Mando will help you deal with it. But not only how normal it was, but how often it was being misdiagnosed and mistreated. Mando is clinically proven to block odor all day and control odor for up to 72 hours. You got the solid deodorant stick. Pretty standard. You've got the spray deodorant, the cream tube deodorant, so many varieties of Mando's cutting edge product that's clinically proven to control odor better than a shower with soap alone. So if you want to try America's number one whole body deodorant formula right now, you can find them in Walmart, Target, and other retailers across the country. But for the best deals, you're going to want to go to shopmando.com and get a starter pack, which is perfect for new customers. It comes with a solid stick deodorant, a cream tube deodorant, two free products of your choice like the mini body wash and the deodorant wipes, and free shipping. Now, as a special offer for our listeners, new customers are going to get $5 off a starter pack with our exclusive code, which equates to over 40% off your starter pack when you use code INSIDER at shopmando.com. That's S-H-O-P-M-A-N-D-O.com. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. Boost your confidence from head to toe with Mando.
All right. Well, I'm not going to bury the lead. David Stone withdrew from the portal. Awesome news for the University of Oklahoma. That was huge. I mean, like, I think there's this notion out there, and that I guess maybe I said harsh things. I don't know, Parker. I was honest about the situation.
I tell you, Brandon, I've experienced it. You certainly experienced it this past weekend. It's something that both of us have experienced many times over. Sometimes I think our job and our line of work right now is harder than it has ever been. yeah. as we navigate the NIL era and everything that comes with it. But it is impossible to please and to satisfy some folks, because the very same folks that will demand that you tell the full story, spare no details, give them what they pay their hard-earned money for, all fair, right? But then those same people want to turn around and say that you've done something wrong or something unprofessional when you do tell the full story. So yeah. Can't have it both ways, but unfortunately not everybody is mindful of that.
Yeah, look, he liked my tweet when I said he had people pulling at all directions at him. And when I said there are people that use these kids, there are other tweets out there from other people very connected to the University of Oklahoma that said the very same thing that I said. So, I mean, this is not new. And this is why I said it on the original rapid reaction when he got in the portal. I said, I hate this for the kid. He is an amazing human being. He has always been amazing. He's treated me amazingly. I have known the kid since he was in eighth grade. And I will never say a disparaging word about that kid. Never, ever, ever. Because he has quite literally one of the biggest hearts. And you know this because you know him, Parker. He has one of the biggest hearts you'll ever meet. Like his smile, like everything about that kid is top of the line, awesome. And he got taken advantage of. It was unfortunate. He did. But it doesn't matter now because they have remedied some of these situations for him. He's getting help. There's things that are going to be taken care of there in that situation. And it's not like instant reaction is OU paid out the wazoo to have him come back. I'm not going to say yes or no there. But what I will say is that how would I word this? I think you're sorely mistaken if you think there was like this major substantial pay raise to come back to the University of Oklahoma. So I'm not going to say yes or no, he got more money or didn't get more money, because that's nobody's business at this point. Right. Like I think that what is the business is he's back at Oklahoma and he's happy. It's where he wanted to be at all times. Like that, he had, as much as he had people in around, close people around him, Parker, that might have wanted him to go get more money elsewhere to continue living a lifestyle that they've been used to, right? At the same time, there were people in his corner that were like, dude, like you can do this here at Oklahoma if you do this, this, and this. And I want to aiken back to, I don't think it's a secret. Gabe Eichert said, if you perform, you get paid. And that's the God's honest truth. And he also said what I said, there are people that these kids are right. They're providing for whole families. And unfortunately that is part of, that's a cross college football, Parker. It is a cross college football. And I think we saw a very hard part of NIL, and we're seeing it more and more, right? Like just the hard realities, some of this stuff. And it's tough, but I'll say this, the kid has immense potential. I fully expect him to ball out this year. Is that, I don't think that's going out on a limb either. Do you?
No, I don't. I think it's perfectly fair to expect that this is going to be the year that David Stone takes a step forward. Maybe not the step forward. I think that probably happens sophomore to junior year. I mean, for a lot of guys, that's when it clicks, right?
Kind of like Gerald McCoy, right? Like third year.
Yeah. But look, David Stone, I mean, the Gerald McCoy comparisons, the parallels make a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. Gerald McCoy didn't do as much as a true freshman as David Stone did. In fact, Gerald McCoy did nothing as a true freshman. He redshirted as a true freshman. So to those that sat there, especially once he got in the portal, and of course at that point everybody was under the impression that he was leaving, which, valuable lesson here, just because a guy gets in the transfer portal does not mean he is leaving. So probably reserve your hot takes and judgments until he goes and lands at a new institution. But also,
well, we were surprised he came back, right?
No, like, no doubt. Right?
Like, a guy like that. There was a chance, and we said that every time. We said there's a chance, but that surprised the crap out of us.
That said, the people that were taking to social media to say, oh boy, how will Oklahoma manage to replace two tackles? He was a true freshman, man. I get the trendy thing, the sexy thing these days is, and I know it's all too easy to look at like what a guy like Ryan Williams did at Alabama or Ryan Wingo did at Texas, or certainly Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, or, you know, pick whatever example you want to pick. There's a reason why guys like that earn such press and such publicity. It's because, yes, they're tremendously gifted football players, but they're also way ahead of schedule because you don't expect that.
What position they play?
You shouldn't expect that of a true freshman. Yeah, all three guys I cited, they're wide receivers. And so that certainly factors into things as well. It's more difficult to crack the rotation early on in the trenches than it is at a skill position, generally speaking. But also, man, like, I know we live in an instant gratification society. I fully recognize and acknowledge that, but it's okay if a true freshman, even a five-star true freshman, doesn't set the world on fire right off the bat. It's not cause to jump off the bandwagon.
Right. No, that's, you're correct. And I think people are going to point to Jaden Jackson. Right, because he had the year that everybody thought David Stone was going to have. But I think people need to also understand that David Stone is asked to do a lot more when he's in there than, even though they play a similar position, they don't play the same position, right? They're two separate types of defensive tackles. Like, Jaden Jackson's true zero tech, like to a T, he's a true zero tech. Like, he's there to take a blocker on. He's there. He is going to be a good pass rushing defensive tackle. Don't get me wrong. But that's what David Stone, that's his strength. And so I am interested to see how he rebounds. Brent Venables said he is the most improved defensive tackle this spring. And I think because on the heels of that statement when he got in the portal, right, like within like a week or so, I think that's what made this a bigger deal than it might have been had that phrase not been echoed. Would you agree with that? Like, I think that caused more of a five alarm fire than maybe it would have at another point. On top of that, I guess there's multiple things. He was a Oklahoma City kid, five-star kid. The fans loved him. He loves Oklahoma. He's an amazing human being that has great relationships with a lot of fans. And I think that has a lot to do with it as well. He's such a personable kid, a great personable kid. So you add all that stuff, and then he was the most improved. OU fans looking, going, okay, so he's going to fill in the spot that maybe a Dejon Terry left, right? That scared everybody. Defensive tackles of his ilk are hard to find in the portal. But he's back. At what point, like, you know, you look at the Nico Amialava stuff, Imalava stuff that happened, right? You look at the David Stone situation. You look at, there's a couple more sprinkled in this spring, right, that have been a little more public and more dramatic than in years past, right? Do you think those things swing the fans further away from college football? Or do you think that leads the administration, the higher ups, to try to fix this thing faster so that that doesn't happen with the fans?
Okay, hang on. Run me through this again.
So all the drama, right? And I think you see a lot of people on Twitter asking, you know, so the money that was given to NIL just went for nothing, right? With the, yeah, David, sure, Stone, or the Nico Amialava stuff, or I can't. There was a couple more that were pretty dramatic entries this spring.
Yeah.
More so than not, right? More so than
so,
usual.
Do you think that moves
people away, or do you think there's a chance that wakes up the higher ups to make this thing get fixed a lot faster?
Well, I think what we've learned over the past several years is that you can't count on the NCAA to fix its own problems. Those problems aren't going to be solved until the power is fully removed from the National Collegiate Athletic Association. But look, man, I understand why some people feel disillusioned with college football. I understand why a lot of people feel disenfranchised, man. Like, there is more being asked of the average fan than ever before, with less return than ever before for the average fan. And it's a natural consequence of the NIL era. And until there is some structure implemented, until there are steps taken to address all of this, man, I think there are people that are going to care less and less about the sport, not tune out, but not show up. I think there are going to be plenty of people that say, well, you know what? I can just watch the game at home on my TV for free. I don't have to keep feeding the machine. I shouldn't keep feeding the machine if this is just the path we're going down, where there's less and less loyalty in this sport than ever before. And I can't count on seeing the university figureheads, the key faces, the faces of the organization, if you will, the most beloved and lovable players on this roster. If I can't even count on those guys to be on my team next year, then why would I keep feeding the machine? Why would I continue to participate in all of this? So I think that's natural. I think that's already happening, and I think that's only going to continue until we get structural change, which at this point probably looks like collective bargaining.
Oh, collective bargaining. You're going to have a union, a player union in college football. How interesting that will be.
Well,
it has to happen.
Yeah, no, it has to happen, especially because here's an interesting conversation, or here's an interesting aspect to it all is, how do you regulate third-party money? Collective bargaining is pretty much the only way, isn't it? At this point, that's the one thing that neither the NCAA nor the schools nor anyone else can regulate is third-party money.
Mm-hmm. Straight cash, homie.
And the second that anybody tries to challenge or provide guardrails for third-party money, you're going to get sued and you're going to lose. I was having a very insightful conversation this morning with somebody that is well-versed in this area of things, and that's something that they brought up. Look, third-party money is the one thing that nobody can regulate right now. And until you have some sort of system that effectively regulates third-party money, there's going to be a ton of it floating around and a ton of it spent. And it's going to perpetuate the imbalance that we see in the sport.
And you're talking about under the table, like cash, third-party cash, like that they cannot see or hear or know about, nor they can they control it because there's no way to trace it. Is that what you're talking about? Does this go back to like, are we getting back to like talking about the $500 handshakes again?
But no, not necessarily.
But it's much larger?
More so a booster or someone from outside the university, someone from outside the NIL collective saying, I'm going to pay this guy $500,000 to come to this institution, and you can't do anything about it because I'm a third party.
So what, you know, Joe C's talked about the policing that's going to take place after July 1st because of the guardrails that they're going to have.
The clearinghouse, right? The
clearinghouse, yeah. So
there's just no way that holds up in court.
You don't think so?
No.
It's supposed
to
be passed maybe by the end of this week, right?
Well, I have no doubt it's going to get passed, but like what I'm talking about is, let's say you
when they appeal it, yeah, when the player appeals.
Let's
say
you institute the clearinghouse and they try to strike down an NIL deal. Whatever player it involves,
Yeah, that's going
to
be
gonna
a court
take,
problem.
Yep, they're going to take the matter to court and they will win.
And they'll get there will be a line like it's like you're trying to get into a I guess during the apocalypse, maybe I guess a food camp, right? Like that big of a line of attorneys that will do that for pro bono just to get their name out there as well. So yeah, no, I hear you. What does this do for, like, in your mind? For me, I think getting David Stone back, I don't know that it solidifies the defensive line, because I think the defensive line was already solidified. You know, I think if they would have got another body, I think they would have still been really good. I think this just solidified, I think, is a bad word. I think it takes it to another level that it was at, right? Like, you're up here with David Stone. Without him, you're probably right here. Now, if he reaches any sort of potential this year, what do you think? Like, do you think he could be a starter by the end of the year? Like, is that your expectation for Stone?
It's going to be tough, man. And not because he doesn't have the potential to be really good, because he does, but yeah. Who is he usurping? Jaden Jackson or Dominic Williams? And if it's either of those two guys, who's to say that Grayson Halton doesn't do it first? You know, I feel like throughout, assuming they're healthy throughout the 2025 season, your principal starters at defensive tackle are going to be Dominic Williams and Jaden Jackson. But obviously, you're going to see a heavy dose of Grayson Halton and David Stone.
Yeah, and you know, I bring that comment up because, or that question up because I was reading comments on Twitter. I was reading comments on YouTube.
Oh, no, never read the YouTube comments.
Oh, I know.
Bad idea.
Yeah, I caught myself doing that. I even responded to a few, but anyways. one of them said if they were going to cut a defensive tackle's money, and I think that's a poor way to use the David Stone situation, is cut because there's incentives to get him to where he needs to be, which is something we can discuss if we want to. They would have to, why didn't they just do it to Dominic Williams? Because he only had one sack last year, or two sacks or whatever. And I think you have to look at the bigger picture that Dominic Williams took place last year, as far as several things. He didn't play third downs quite a bit. If I remember correctly, the big issue with Dominic Williams was he got pulled on third downs, correct? Like, he did not play a lot of third downs, if I remember correctly. That was like an issue. And two, he's one of the best run-stopping defensive tackles in college football. Why would you cut that dude's pay? Like, I guess I don't understand that. Like, are we just looking at sacks, I guess? I don't know, man. I don't know. I guess based on that, maybe. But the dude was unreal at the run game. Like, he was an amazing run stopper, right? So I think people are just trying to point fingers, and it is, you know, that is what it is. As far as the rest of the portal goes, do you think OU adds another defensive tackle to the bunch?
It sure looks that way.
It does, doesn't it?
It sure looks that way.
I'll let you pronounce the name. I was what I was getting at.
Ricky Lolohea.
There you go.
Former Oklahoma State Cowboy. Spent the 2023 season in Stillwater. Signed with the program as a three-star recruit out of Euless Trinity High School. Is that where Ollie Gordon went to school? Was he a Euless Trinity kid?
Ollie Gordon?
Yeah.
Was he?
I know, man. Oklahoma is currently pursuing a target at Euless Trinity, and that, of course, is the massive offensive lineman Toa Katoa. But yep, there you go. Ollie Gordon was a Euless Trinity kid. So anyway,
yep,
that is neither here nor there. Ricky Lolohea signed with Oklahoma State as a three-star prospect out of Euless Trinity in the 2023 class. Spent a year in Stillwater, redshirted, didn't see the field, then transferred out to Utah State, where he played for none other than
Nate Dryling. Yep.
Spent the 2024 season in Logan, Utah as a Utah State Aggie. Appeared in 8 games, registered 10 tackles, which, you know, ho-hum, he's a defensive tackle. You're not racking up tackles in general at that position. But this is a guy that Oklahoma thinks can provide some valuable depth. Now, I'll be honest, Brandon, I'm not sitting here convinced that they need it. I think at this point in time, depth at wide receiver and depth at cornerback is probably more important. But obviously, the folks in the building at the Switzer Center get paid a whole lot more than I do to weigh in with their opinions, and they feel that as of right now, they could use another defensive tackle. So this is the guy that's come into focus for OU. As we sit here recording on a Monday night, he just very recently posted a video to his Instagram, his official visit hype video, if you will. And looks like he's definitely having a good time. No word yet on a commitment or a signature even, but it would appear that Oklahoma is in good shape to land not only Ricky Lolohea, but also the other visitor that's on campus today, Missouri State transfer tight end Lance Mace. That's priority A1 for Oklahoma right now.
It has to be, yeah.
Landing their tight end and the specific tight end that they are most actively pursuing, most fervently pursuing, is Lance Mason. 590 yards, 6 touchdowns last year. Second team All Missouri Missouri Valley Conference guy, excuse me, at Missouri State. And okay, he's an FCS transfer. You keep the expectations modest, but I'll tell you, within the building at Oklahoma, they certainly believe he can show up and potentially be the starter at tight end come the fall. He's going to have to go and take it because, as one source explained to me today, everybody in that tight end room throughout the spring demonstrated that they're really good at something or multiple things in some cases. There's nobody in that tight end room that's just not a player. Everybody brings something. It's just a matter of who winds up being the best overall option. There's a lot of belief that could wind up being Lance Mason. And if not, Brandon, if he's not the clear-cut top option, at least he's somebody that's going to come in should he pick Oklahoma and provide some additional competition, which ideally you would hope elevates somebody, maybe multiple guys in that room, and prods them to raise their level of play to the point where they emerge as a legit weapon for Oklahoma and really take a jump in advance of the 2025 season. Oklahoma needs that at tight end. I don't feel like they need like a Braden Willis or a Mark Andrews. I don't think they need a tight end to go for 750 receiving yards.
Yeah.
But they need somebody that's going to be able to block effectively and be an actual threat to go catch a pass and make something happen after the catch.
I don't know why I thought Missouri State played Oklahoma in like 2022.
They played him in 2020. Bobby Petrino was the head coach.
I was sitting here looking. I was like, he played against Oklahoma. I was looking at trying to find the stats.
It was the only non-con game of the 2020 season.
Yeah.
Season opener, September 12th, 2020. I remember it very distinctly. Oklahoma won that game 48-0. A shutout for Alex Grinch.
Yeah, in front of 25,000 people, if I remember correctly. Big crowds during the COVID era. Yeah, no, I think, look, Lance Mason had 590, almost 600 yards and 6 touchdowns last year. Yes, it's Missouri State. Yes, it's FCS, whatever. The fact of the matter is that he, as far as, I believe he's the most productive guy they would have on the roster, right?
Yeah, probably so. I would have to take another look back at what Carson Kent did at Kennesaw State, but offhand, I believe that is correct. As it sits, Oklahoma has a total of 4 catches on the roster, at least catches that have occurred in an OU uniform. Caden Helms has 3 of them. Caden McIntyre has 1. Nobody else in that tight end room has caught a pass as an Oklahoma Sooner. So any way you slice it, you're banking on somebody to do something that they haven't done before. Yeah. And it, oh man, I don't even want to say these words because I know people are going to hate me for saying them and hate that they're hearing me say them. But like, if Lance Mason is the next Bauer Sharp, I think that's fine.
Yeah.
Minus the swirly twirly interception in Baton Rouge and the dropped touchdown pass against Alabama. Like, as long as you don't get that side of the new Bauer Sharp, then I think if Lance Mason is the type of guy that can show up and log 30 catches for 400 yards, it's worth the investment in my mind. Because I guarantee you 30 catches and 400 yards isn't going to lead the team this year the way that it did when Bauer Sharp was a Sooner.
I mean, Bauer Sharp, for all of his, I guess you want, if you want to call them mishaps or
follies,
follies, has and still does have a big upside. And you talk to the LSU people and they're like, yeah, he's going to be a big focal point for them. That's going to piss OU fans off. I would not be shocked to see him come and get 4 or 5 catches against Oklahoma and Norman, just because, you know, that's how it works, right? Like
he and Nick Anderson are going to go off.
That's just how it works. That's just the way it goes. If you're an Oklahoma fan or you cover the University of Oklahoma or whatever, you get to watch this crap happen on an annual basis.
As a wise man once said, it'd be like that sometimes.
It'd be like that sometimes. Yeah, that's right. And so, but if you can get the good version of Bauer Sharp, the guy that would make, prime example, against Auburn, Bauer Sharp was really good against Auburn. And he made, a couple of catches, leaped over a guy, like hurdled a dude. And that's kind of that was the Bauer Sharp we kept hearing about during spring and fall camp. It just wasn't consistent. So I guess the best way to say it is, if you're going to get the consistent version of Bauer Sharp, and that's who Lance Mason is, you'll take that. You know, every day, twice on Sunday, man. Like, you'll take that if you're Oklahoma, because that means you have an option that you didn't have last year. And I think, let's say, like, if they don't get Lance Mason, how much do you think? Because I don't think they use the tight end much at all if they don't get Lance Mason. I really don't. I do not think they use the tight end all that much. I think maybe as an H-back, maybe a blocker, maybe a screen here or there to Jaron Kanick to let him use his athleticism. But I just can't see it being a down in and down out focal point that it might be if you have a consistent player there.
Yeah. I would agree with you. I think if somehow they don't land Lance Mason, which the word is, again, they're in pretty good shape there. Mm-hmm. Like that should come together, barring a drastic turn of events. But assuming that happens, great. If it doesn't happen, the tight end that probably gets used the most this fall,
yeah,
I'd say it's Jaron Kanick, because like you're just, I think at that point you're leaning on the freakazoid. If you're bringing a tight end in the game and using him for something more than blocking, you're probably going to give the preference to Jaron Kanick for the sake of his athleticism. Yeah. Now, the one real wild card to me in that group is Caden Helms. If he is truly past all of the injuries and doesn't show any long-term effects of those injuries, I think he is the guy that has the potential to be the most complete tight end on Oklahoma's roster. But short of that, again, I think you lean on Jaron Kanick's athleticism if you're throwing a tight end out there.
I agree. I completely agree.
Maybe I have a completely different opinion 2 weeks into fall camp. I don't know. But from where I sit right now today, April 21st, 2025, that's kind of how I see it.
Mm-hmm. No. I think you're factually correct. I as far as just the rest of the roster, Oklahoma's trying to find a wide receiver. Like, they're trying. You see the offers put out. I just don't, like, how much do you think? How much do you think they're going to have to spend to get one that's worth its salt and actually worth the offer or the visit or the roster spot, because I know they're looking for, and I talked to a source this weekend that said they need 6 foot and above.
Yeah.
That's what they need. What do you think the price tag is on that right now?
I would say for a guy that is worth the take,
mm-hmm.
you're probably not going to be able to find much. But I know we've talked about this on OU Insider. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast. I'll just throw this out there. Like, the Trajan Bridges thing is not happening.
It is not.
Trajan Bridges is not going to be an Oklahoma Sooner. Ship hasn't sailed with Keon Brown, though.
I feel like that's their fallback, but it's just going to be kind of throw your net into the water and see if he can't land on the good side of the academics to make it in.
Yes.
I mean, if that does truly happen, though, that's huge, because that dude can ball. Like, that would be a big deal.
If that's your 14th scholarship wide receiver, Brandon.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if there's a program in the country that has a more talented 14th scholarship wide receiver. He's a freak.
Unbelievable freak.
He's just got to stay eligible.
I know that they're just, I hate to say this, like, they're trying to find somebody that can, one, be the gap filler until Giovanni Gibson gets healthy, or two, be so good that it doesn't matter if Giovanni doesn't have to rush back. Those are the options they would love, because then that person is playing so well that they probably worked themselves into an NFL draft talk.
Which, if that's what it is, man, give me Keon Brown. Give him to me. Now you can get him into school. Come on now.
There are ways. There are ways.
I know for a fact Oklahoma got one of those transfer receivers into school earlier this offseason with some real bad grades himself. So they can make it happen.
I mean, you can. They just have to make sure those kids do what they need to do to make it happen. So, like, mm-hmm. that means go to class, kids. Stay in school. Don't do drugs. I don't know. I'm just
not that we're insinuating Keon Brown.
No, we're not. We're not insinuating that at all. I was trying to make a Dare joke for those that grew up on Dare. Did you grow up on Dare?
No, I don't believe I did. I don't even know what that is offhand.
What?
Randy, you got to keep in mind, I'm, what, 15 years younger than you?
Yeah, D-A, D dot, D period, A period, R period, E period. You don't remember Dare?
Nope, sure don't.
With the bear? Oh, man, like, boy, the comments, talk to them. Talk to them, commenters.
I'm sure they will. They always do.
All right. What, OU's out on the road, naturally. They're going. I know they went and saw Caden Hall down in Fort Lauderdale, the 2026 four-star safety that Oklahoma's in on. Oklahoma continues to feel good about that one, by the way. Like, it's weird as that sound, and as hard as that may be to wrap your head around, a safety from Fort Lauderdale liking Oklahoma so much that they feel good about it, you have to remember Brandon Hall is the one recruiting. And if he's in charge, he generally gets one or two guys that are elite every cycle without fail. He's the master. I don't think that's a secret. Like, he is. If you had to rank the recruiters, one through, just say top five recruiters on the staff.
Man, that's tough. That's really tough.
He's like, I don't want to even do that.
Well, it's like, there's so, I could come up with the five best. You're splitting hairs between. I have guys that spring to mind that could just as easily be one as they could be like four. You know, there's some really compelling cases.
Yeah,
I would say pound for pound,
Hall's won, right? Like, at this point, what he's done, him or what, maybe Bates?
I would say Bill Beatonbow is 5.
Okay.
I'm going to go... man, even as I'm saying this, I'm second-guessing it. I'm going to go Jay Valaya, number 4.
Okay.
Beatonbow... Well, I said Beatonbow at 5. Yeah, Valaya at 4. Top 3 is probably Bates, Hall, and Emmett.
That's what I mean. And you can... But Chavis has done such a good job. Yeah, Chavis.
He really has. Like, yeah. Chavis is up and coming, man. He's a guy that 2-3 years down the road, I think he's going to be in the national conversation as a guy that's one of the best recruiters of defensive backs in the country.
Agreed. Yep. I think he's just starting to get his legs.
I mean, the other obvious big time wild card would be Ben Arbuckle. Like, what if Ben Arbuckle gets hot as a recruiter? Then just because of the consequential nature of the position he's recruiting to,
yeah,
that it will have a real conversation on our hands.
Because I think you look at what Chavis could potentially do in this class with KJ Ford, right, and Jake Krill. I mean, my goodness, Parker, like. If you land those two, you are swinging a big stick, if you know what I mean. And you'd have to be up there as one of the elite recruiters in the nation at that point. I think that's where Chavis is headed as he continues to get his legs underneath him. And he's starting to realize who he is as a recruiter. I think that's – people need to realize that he's only been doing – this will be, what, year 4 for him? As far as just recruiting. And remember, who was the first person he ever landed? High school. Not transfer. High school.
R. Mason Thomas. It was R. Mason Thomas.
Bingo. The transfer was Jonah Laulu, which tells you he hit pretty big time on the first two.
Well, I guess well, R. Mason and Grayson Halton technically happened on the same day because they both didn't, as I recall, they both didn't announce that they were flipping. We all knew it was happening, but they didn't announce that they were coming to Oklahoma until signing day in February of 22.
And then Henry, Kavion Henry was also up there too. And
oh my goodness, yes.
He was a stud.
Kevonte Henry happened Kevonte that same Henry, day. Yeah. Man, that was a big... That was a big signing day for Miguel Chavis. Holy smokes.
Yep. He started off hot.
No doubt. And man, like he goes against Jake Krell, he can take the rest of the cycle off, which he won't, but you get Jake Krell.
You have to throw a caveat out there just because people will freak out. He won't. I promise you, he's not going to take the days off, guys.
I heard Parker say that if Chavis landed Jake Krell, he would just stop recruiting in the 2026 cycle. Can't believe that guy.
It's just known.
If you land Jake Krell, man, I am sold on that kid being an all-conference dude by his junior year. I mean, completely sold. Because here's my thing, Brandon. As you look at the edge position, what we have come to know as the edge position, over the last 5 years, I would say there's been a real divide, if you will, or a real divergence of the path in terms of what you value at the position. More so than ever, there's a large chunk of the industry and a large chunk of the coaches that are tasked with evaluating and recruiting premier edge talent that value tools, right? They want the toolsy guys. They want the dudes that are 6'5", bendy, with freakishly long arms. Like PJ comes to mind, right? Mm-hmm. Guys like PJ... For good reason, there are so many that are enamored with those types of specimens. But also, man, think about the polar opposite of somebody like PJ. And to me, a guy like R. Mason Thomas or a guy like Ethan Downs comes to mind. And they're not even the same player, right? But between Armason Thomas and Ethan Downs, you have two guys that are not terribly physically imposing relative to creatures like PJ. But what they are is really polished, really aggressive, hair on fire type football players. And they produce.
Yeah.
And Jake Krell is certainly in the latter camp. And man, I've seen too many toolsy edge rushers, and I'm not insinuating that this is true of PJ, because I don't think it is or will be, but I've seen way too many toolsy edge rushers flop in recent years. Way too many. The guys that never seem to flop, even if they don't wind up becoming all conference type dudes, the guys that seem to just end up becoming really solid, stable football players at the P4 level are generally those guys that are football players,
yeah,
as opposed to specimens. The guys that, even if they don't possess the freakish physical gifts that some of their peers possess, they just know how to play the game, they get it, and they allow for their motor to make up for what they can't attain due to lack of arm length or height or whatever it may be. Jake Krell is a guy who is 6'3", 230 pounds. And if you passed him on the street, okay, yeah, you know, you'd probably think, yeah, he plays football. But you would not imagine he's a top 30 national prospect regardless of position, man. Yeah, and at defensive end, mind you. Because he just, there's nothing spectacular by modern standards about his frame.
No.
But anybody that has watched that kid, whether on tape or in a camp setting or with your own two eyes, as Brandon and I have, there are not many football players in the country I would rather have on my team than Jake Krell, because he is angry as all hell.
He is
coming to rip somebody's head off every single time the football is snapped.
Every time. I just harken back to the 5-star challenge in Jacksonville last summer, and we were both just like, what the hell?
He's a psycho, man. He's an absolute psycho in the best way.
I kid you not. He would go and beat the tackle, and he would sprint back as fast as he could and be like, let's go again. And he would convince the coaches to let him whoop the tackle's ass one more time, because he got
completely unhinged.
Yes.
Completely unhinged. I love it. I love that kid.
His personality and Chavis's personality are just two peas in a pod. You can completely tell, like, getting a guy like him, getting a Taylor Wine, right? And even you talk about Ethan Downs was very much like that as well. Just crazy when he put those pads on. I'm trying to think who else is out there. Armason Thomas is nutty. But Danny Okoye is the same way. Like, there's something just off when they put their helmet on that you're like, they're going to kill somebody.
Demon
when
it's time. Awesome.
Yes. And but that, hey, that's what you want. And those type of guys have always been... I know people are going to say, well, they work in every system. No, they don't. They do not work in every system. You look at Saban's teams over the years, like, there hasn't been a lot of undersized dudes that really make it big in Saban's defense. They're all chalk, generic, your standard measurement guys that are 6'4", 6'3", 250-pound, 260-pound, 270-pound edge rushers, right? Like, defensive ends. Venable's defense allows for the hybrid guys, allows for those different body types, because you look at, like, Ohio State, prime example with Jake Krell. Ohio State was a major player for Jake Krell, and it sounds like they're not pushing as hard because of size, right? Like, that just comes into it. And we're looking at it going, Armason Thomas is one of the best edge rushers in all of college football, and they have very similar body frame. Very similar. And those type of guys work. You want to know who recruited one of the best sack master's in OU history and didn't get to coach him for very long? Brent Venables. You wonder who I'm talking about?
Who's that?
Eric Stryker.
All 5'11", 240 of them.
And that's exactly, he became amazing, and he did exactly what Brent Venables recruited him to Oklahoma to do. Mike Stoops followed through with it. Boom, he was an amazing edge rusher. That's my point. In BV's defense, you don't have to make every measurement. They will make, if you're a football player, he will make sure you're playing football at a high level. And I think that's what makes it beautiful. Like, beauty is in the eye of the beholder in Oklahoma. And a lot of people obviously think Jake Crail is amazing because we have him in the top 30 players in the country. He's on the verge of being a five-star. But he's on the verge of being a five-star because he's a freaking badass on the field, not because he's 6'4", 250 pounds.
I
love that about him.
I've never seen a more psychotic football player than Jake Crail. He will play NFL football for a long time.
Eric Stryker was pretty
time.
Psychotic, by the way.
Yeah, he was. You have to be. Again, you have to be if you're that size. And, you know, Jake Crail, if he isn't a psycho, he's probably, you know, good, solid three-star prospect.
Yep.
Low-end G5 dude. Or, I'm sorry, low-end P4, high-end G5 dude. Mm-hmm. As it is, there's not a school in the country that shouldn't want that guy.
That shouldn't.
Because he's terrifying.
Yep. Yes, agreed. What do you think? I mean, I'm excited for the end of this week because I think we get to go watch, or I get to go watch Jaden O'Neal throw.
Mm.
And there'll be a lot of colleges out there. Well, five. Arbuckle will be there. All right, and everybody else. I'm excited to go see that. I am excited to see what Oklahoma does. Not just finishing out the portal, because do you think the rest of the college football world is waking up to the fact that Oklahoma is now a problem because they're doing what they're doing in the spring portal season? Things that they did not think Oklahoma, I think it started in December, right, in the winter portal, and I think it just rolled over into spring. Do you think the rest of the college football world is starting to pay attention? Because you're starting to hear some buzz that Oklahoma could be a problem this fall. But do you think people actually buy, it's talk, but do you think they actually buy the words that they're saying?
Is it going to be unpopular if I say no?
No, because I kind of agree with you.
I just say, you know, it's the off season.
Mm-hmm.
It's the off season.
I agree.
It's engagement farming time. It's peak engagement farming season right now.
Which leads into my point I was going to make, and I'm glad you went that way, because I think that these same people are going to turn around and they're going to say, well, Oklahoma's only going to win 7 games. They're going to beat their 6.5 win total, but it's only going to be by half a win. And they will have sucked you into believing that these people think that they're a playoff team. Now, I will say that they're Jake Crane came out and he said that he thinks Oklahoma's a playoff team. I did see that. So I believe Jake Crane believes what he's saying. I don't know if Pakel does. I don't know if everybody else does, right? Like, they're starting to believe in this. I'm interested to see what Pakel predicts, because he did call 6-6.
Yes, he did.
He called it and he took heat for it. So props to him. If he really follows through and says Oklahoma's going to win 8, 9, 10 games, I think fans will believe at that point, because how on point he was last year, right? So, I will say I think I said 9-3 was my end, but I believe I was 8-4, 9-3 type guy, and I went with 9-3. And I said that last year. I'm 8-4, 9-3. I was not high on last year's team, and I thought that was a step back from that 10-win season, right? And this isn't engagement, Parker. I really believe this team might be better than even I thought they were going to be. And, yeah, it's only May, or almost May. So we'll see. But I think things are trending positively. We just got to see how they finish out the roster, right? Like if they get you a tight end, if they get another wide receiver, I think you'll feel more confident in that. But I still think there are positives that make me believe that this thing could be better than it was last year. So, but we'll see. Lastly, basketball, Xavier Brown. Not a shocker.
Brandon, no, I mean, that was fully expected after the Sooners' addition of Justin Scott as an assistant.
Correct.
Oklahoma basketball has had a truly fantastic offseason. Like, genuinely fantastic. I don't think anybody has to put a spin on it. I don't think anybody has to look for a bright side. I don't think anybody has to convince themselves to be optimistic. No, we can all look at this objectively and say Oklahoma basketball has had a fantastic offseason to this point, and they have made major moves in the transfer portal, the likes of which we have not seen them make in the Porter Moser era to this point. It's amazing what money does.
Money can buy you wins, and it looks like that's what's happening with basketball in a big way. They need to get another, I guess maybe a another post player. And I look, who's that with the Alabama
Darion Reed.
Darion Reed. He hasn't committed to NC State. It sounds like that's the potential to happen. If he gets out of that visit without committing to NC State, he's supposed to visit Oklahoma, right? And if that happens, now you're cooking with some grease, and you may go get one more guard, maybe. I think you kind of have to, but it doesn't have to be like a, it doesn't have to be a Xavier Brown type. It doesn't have to be a Nigel Pack type, right? Like you don't need a huge, huge name. You just need somebody that can add some positive depth to help the Dayton Forsythes of the world, right? And stuff like that. I still think this team has a chance to be pretty special if they continue to, if they can mesh. I think it all has to do with meshing, and we won't know that until, you know, November or December. But one more thing, and you have to, you got to talk about this. We know Ben Arbuckle, the new offensive coordinator at the University of Oklahoma, knows how to smoke a brisket.
Yeah.
That we do. He will never probably admit if that was a subtle jab at a previous and former West Texas OC type. But it was very well played. And the
Oh
timing
my
was the same
goodness.
too because it was Easter, just like Lincoln Riley.
Legendary use of Twitter.
Yes.
Legendary use of Twitter by Mr. Arbuckle. The fans loved it, as you knew
Yeah,
they
they did.
would.
They should. They should. He is endearing himself to the fan base very, very quickly. And well played, sir. Well played, sir. I don't care if you admit to it or not. Well played. All right. That's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners podcast powered by Riverwind Casino. If you're not a member of OU Insider, look, we've talked about the David Stone. We got a whole lot of stuff on David Stone and why, the what's, the hows, the whens, all that on OU Insider VIP. There's a lot of stuff on Portal. There's a lot of stuff on the official visitors that are in town. Portaling, there's a lot of stuff on the upcoming official visitors, the kickers, like, oh, you need a kicker. We got stuff there. We got stuff on recruiting. We've got stuff on basketball transfer portal. We got stuff on softball. It's all over there, and you can join just by one coffee at Starbucks, like literally $9.95 or $99.95 for a whole year, which is probably the better deal. And we would love to have you. There's thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of OU fans already on there. The community is awesome. It's fun. It's growing, growing, growing. We thank you guys so much for everything that you all do because our job, we don't do it if you guys aren't involved. Like, we do the job because you allow us to do it, OU fans. So we feel blessed. We thank you guys so very much. If you're a college student with a .edu email, again, a .edu email, you have to be emailing us from that, or a Active duty military with active duty military email. Email us OUinsider@rivals.com. We will send you a promo code to get OU Insider for $11.95 for a whole year. That is a deal less than $1 a month. Again, .edu, have to email us from that. You're a college student or active duty military. And you have to email us from both those accounts. They have to .edu or active military to OUinsider@rivals.com. We will send you a promo code, $11.95. All right, that's going to do it for this version of the OU Insider Under the Visor Sooners podcast, powered by Riverwinds Casino. For Parker Thune, my name is Brandon Drum. You guys have a blessed day.